Today on Straight Talk Africa, critics are asking whether U.S. African foreign policy is about promoting American values of democracy, freedom of expression, and the rule of law. Or is it driven, as some observers say, by a desire for stability and the fight against terrorism? That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, June 10th. I am Shaka Sali.
Well, hello to you, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll talk about how some political observers view U.S. policy towards Africa.
And coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share your thoughts on the topic through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. Hope you'll stay with us.
But first, President Obama is expected to go to Kenya in July. Secretary of State John Kelly made a surprise visit to Somalia in May. He is the first sitting Secretary of State ever to do so and the highest-ranking U.S. official to go there in decades. My colleague Paul Sisko has more.
The unannounced three-hour visit to Mogadishu by U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry signals a readiness to re-engage a country that has been a haven for militants. Kerry met with Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud and his prime minister at the heavily defended airport in Mogadishu. He addressed the Somali population by video.
We all have a stake in your success. The world cannot afford to have places on the map that are essentially ungoverned. 3 years have passed since a new provisional constitution was adopted and a parliament sworn in. With help from AMISOM, Somali forces have pushed al-Shabaab out of major population centers.
Kerry said a determined international effort has put virtually all of Somalia's pirates out of business. And he told his Somali host the U.S. is beginning the process of establishing a diplomatic mission in Mogadishu. Kerry's delegation also made a first-ever stop in Djibouti. The U.S. conducts drone strikes against extremist commanders from the East African nation. And Kerry's delegation also held talks with Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta in Nairobi, offering more anti-terrorism assistance and addressing other U.S. political concerns.
America has learned in our own fight against terrorism that we have to be true to democratic values, not just because it's right, but also because it's the only sure path to security over the long term. So I am glad that today President Kenyatta reinforced his agreement with us that human rights and the rule of law have to be respected in the counterterrorism efforts, and that security officials should partner with civil society organizations, especially with those with deep roots in the communities that are scarred by terrorism.
Al-Shabaab militants have staged several deadly attacks in Kenya and elsewhere in East Africa. On April 2nd, 148 people were killed in the attack at Garissa University College. Secretary Kerry also spoke in Nairobi on other political conflicts in South Sudan.
Because of violence, because of more than 2 million people who've been displaced from their homes, with each day the ranks of the hungry and the malnourished grow, and none of this had to happen. But it did happen because the country's leaders failed to act on behalf of the best interests of their people and their nation.
And he commented on Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza's desire to seek a new 5-year term.
We are deeply concerned about President Nkurunziza's decision, which flies directly in the face of the constitution of his country. And the violence that is expressing the concern of his own citizens about that choice should be listened to.
Representing President Obama, Secretary of State Kerry also attended the historic inauguration of Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari, assuring him the United States fully supports its efforts against the Boko Haram insurgency and its economic challenges. Paul Sisko, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Now joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests. Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University, based here in Washington, D.C., and Dr. David Himbara, expert analyst on development issues in Africa, working as a strategist for various institutions and for private sector firms and government departments on the continent. He has also served as private secretary and strategic advisor to Rwandan President Paul Kagame. We were expected to be joined by the U.S. Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for African Affairs, Ambassador Robert Jackson, on today's program. But due to circumstances beyond his control, he was unable to do so. Well, we hope, of course, that one of these days we'll either bring him here or bring Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, herself. Mm-hmm. Well, gentlemen, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you another time, really, on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you so much for your invitation. We're happy to participate.
You must welcome. How was your flight from Toronto?
It's just an hour and a half away. It's just a small flight.
A city that apparently has the reputation of being one of the cleanest in the world, at least one of the top 10. Is that true?
Very much so. Top ranked.
Very interesting.
Yes.
And guess what? As far as Africa is concerned, you're talking about Johannesburg, which is under 50, somewhere in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-6193-111. U.S. country code is 1. Let me come here immediately to you, Professor Nyang. I know that we've been at this really very many, many times, at least in the last 15 years. You happen to have, frankly, been one of the original analysts on this program called Straight Talk Africa. And in August, it turns, guess what, 15 years young.
Congratulations.
You're most welcome. We've been talking about Africa. We've been talking about U.S. policy towards Africa and what have you. You've heard, of course, that there are people who say that the emphasis seems to be more on stability and security issues, fighting terrorism, for example, as opposed really to promoting American values, talking about democracy, promoting freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, freedom of the press, freedom of association, talking about rule of law. How do you see it so far?
Yeah, I think what is happening really for U.S. policymakers is something that Richard N. Hash at the Council of Foreign Relations made very clear to the Americans. That the American leadership should pay very much attention to dealing with domestic issues and then going abroad to have legitimacy in negotiating with other people. So these ideas people are putting forward with regard to democracy, it is an attempt to replicate what has been done over the last 200 years of American republicanism elsewhere. There were a lot of problems in America from the beginning, but over time, Americans developed ways of adjusting with the problem. So when it comes to Africa, state building and nation building are the critical issues. When Bill Clinton came to the White House, he was, in a way, naive, in my opinion, to assume that those people who are emerging in East Africa were going to be visionaries who will change Africa. It didn't happen, because what has happened really is, in many of those African countries, the legacies of Kwame Nkrumah with one-party state, with people like Leopold Senghor and Nyerere and others, gradually move away from one-party dictatorship to open the political system so that other political parties can exist.
Mm-hmm.
When Bill Clinton came to the White House, instead of pushing that frontier forward so that you will have pluralism in political parties, they begin to support people who went back to square one. That's why you have U-turn in Uganda with Museveni.
You talked about, of course, his admiration for leaders in East Africa. It's not just East Africa, maybe Eastern and Central Africa, because we are clearly talking about beginning from Eritrea, Isaias Afwerki. We go down to Ethiopia, Meles Zenawi. We go down to Uganda, Yoweri Museveni. We go to Rwanda. You could say, of course, Paul Kagame. And at the time, we're talking 1997, 98, Laurent Desire Kabila of DRC. And he called them, at least his administration, they used to call them a new breed of African leaders. And they went even further to say that, in fact, these people were the beacons of hope for African democracy. Is there any democracy from Asmara through to Kinshasa?
Nothing at all. I would say this categorically. Because right now, I'm very much disturbed about what's happening in Eritrea. Personally, I was involved when Isaias was here with Barakat Selassie. He was teaching in our department. I was with him when they were nobody. They were not in power yet. If Herman Cohen and others didn't broker the peace in England, at Lancaster House, for this narrative.
Right.
I remember him very well as a person when Barack Selassie was in our department working for them. When I read in the internet now what is happening to these Eritreans, I'm very disappointed because you have thousands of Eritreans that are dying in the Mediterranean now. There are Eritreans who are now in Israeli jail. Some of them are killed by ISIS. I am very disturbed about what's happening now. Unfortunately, the Israeli government has worked out a deal with Kagame to get all those illegal immigrants, Eritreans, to be sent to Rwanda. This is the latest agreement.
Very interesting.
Which is sad.
Very interesting, Himbara. So the illegal aliens in Israel are headed to your motherland, Rwanda?
But Shaka, no, thank you. If I could respond to the same question you posed to my colleague.
The new breed of African leaders?
Yeah, basically the United States approach that seems to have kind of shifted from strengthening democratic institutions, the rule of law, on to the issues of stability and peace and that kind of, and terrorism and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be a bit kinder to the United States,
mm-hmm.
and here
and other perhaps other development partners for that matter.
No, I'm talking about United States for one particular reason.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the U.S. is a great friend of African people.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I say that? If I see, for example, the support the United States gives Africa. Odd enough, the great support began under most unlikely head of state here,
mm-hmm.
George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
When he came in, basically the U.S. was supporting Africa by a sum of around $2 billion
mm-hmm.
a year.
Mm-hmm.
He pushed that up at the time he was leaving office to $8 billion a year.
You're talking about
George Bush.
PEPFAR?
No, I'm talking about the general. These mm-hmm. would be health programs.
Fighting malaria, tuberculosis.
Yes, but
HIV
also
AIDS.
Economic development, mm-hmm. agriculture.
But what about Bill Clinton? We're talking about AGOA.
No. That came later. No,
much earlier.
So let's forget him for the time being. I'm talking now about the figures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then President Obama came in. The figure climbed. Now we're talking $10
billion. Mm-hmm.
Now, let us also give them Americans credit.
Mm-hmm.
They make the right noise.
Right.
So the United States stands for democracy, the rule of law. Lately, they are on the record saying that whether these African leaders that want to cling on to power, whether they are their friends or not friends, they must not amend constitutions to suit their own ends.
We'll come back to that aspect later because time happens not to be our best ally.
In a nutshell, I agree that there is a shift from democratic concerns
mm-hmm.
onto anti-terrorism that is very problematic. Yes.
We'll come back later to that.
We'll come back to
that. Now we'll pause for a short break and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter. And we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka. And join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA USA Africa Policy. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
Let's take a look at the five pillars of U.S. policy towards Africa. Number one, support democracy and the strengthening of democratic institutions, including free, fair, and transparent elections. Number two, support African economic growth and development. Number three, assist in conflict prevention, mitigation, and resolution. Number four, support presidential initiatives such as the Global Health, Feed the Future, and the Global Climate Change Initiative. Number five, work with African nations on multinational issues such as drug smuggling, money laundering, illicit arms, and human trafficking.
I wanted to present music and a side of American culture that is most important to me, that is a part of who I am. They're going to get some incredible performances. That's one of the things I love, bringing these artists in so you can get to see them do what they do. It's soul music, and that's what music is. It's that which comes from the soul.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gizuyu Ewart. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. I'm sorry that I had to interject Dr. Himbara, because there is no democracy in Studio 52. If you are told by the producer to go for a break, you have to go.
Yes.
So I hope you'll find some space in your beautiful Rwandan heart. Forgive me for that.
Okay, thank you so much.
Now, David, you talked about, of course, how the U.S. government now seems to be focusing on the issue of respect for term limits in as far as Africa is concerned. Is that what we are trying to say?
Yes, please.
Does this, in a way, remind you of a major statement made by U.S. President Barack Obama back in 2009 in Accra, the Ghanaian capital, and I was there with him. He talked about how Africa does not need strong men. It needs rather strong institutions. There are a lot of people, in fact, who have been saying that he pretty much talked the talk and has not been able so far to walk that talk. Do you agree with those critics?
No, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
You see, it takes two people to tango.
Mm-hmm.
The United States is not Africa. When I think we have to be very sympathetic when we have to look at the people he has to deal with,
mm-hmm.
the leaders of Africa. Let's quickly take a look. Let's quickly take a stock. Say, on the democratic front, that, you know, countries not only have elections, but have independent judiciary, space between parliaments and the executive, regular, credible elections. How many of those? I can count a handful. We can talk about Senegal. We can talk about Ghana. We can talk about South Africa. We can talk about Tanzania. We can talk about Botswana.
Mauritius.
Mauritius.
Namibia.
Namibia. Yes.
Benin.
And Benin, yes.
There is a talk of third term.
Yeah, but I don't think it's okay. We went away from dictator Matthew Kareku.
Okay, very good. So you have those.
Nigeria, of course. You can't forget Nigeria, the big one.
Yes. Imagine we are celebrating. the fact that someone gives power to a winner. Isn't that incredible?
An incumbent in Africa handing over power peacefully to a leader of a major opposition political party.
That speaks volumes, Shaka.
But of course,
you Senegalese did it already.
You cannot, for example, underestimate the pressure that also came from Washington and London. That those elections had to be elections, not selections.
Very good. So on one hand, you have those. But now, on the extreme end, you have what I call the 10 dinosaurs. These are rulers that have been in power for at least 20 years. Mm-hmm. There you have the Angola, Equatorial Guinea.
Teodoro Biang.
Yes. You've got your homeland.
José dos Santos of Angola.
Yeah, your homeland.
Yoweri Museveni, of course, of Uganda.
Of course, we have
Robert Gabriel Mugabe.
The Cameroon.
Paul Obiya.
Cameroon. So you have that.
What about Paul Kagame, by the way?
Okay, now, among the 10, I pull out 2.
All right.
That they have gone even beyond the pale. I call those totalitarian. Because even the other 8, you know, take Uganda, for example. There is what you could call media. The judiciary once in a while passes, overrules the state. The opposition, well, okay, they are beaten, but they are there.
They hold, quote-unquote, periodic elections?
Yes, okay.
Are they elections real?
Okay, so hold on mm-hmm. to the point. Mm-hmm. But now the other 2 I'm talking about. I'm talking about Eritrea. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about Rwanda. Mm. These are totalitarian states.
What about Equatorial Guinea?
I don't put it in that category. Here is how I define it.
The last election, Guinea, you got 97%.
No, it's not election. I'm talking about.
Even Jesus Christ, if he came back here, as he's beloved.
No, all the 10 have no credible elections. That we agree. But the 2 I'm talking about, it's beyond that. It's beyond this.
Why is it beyond that?
The definition is here that it's that drive to control the mind, to control everything of the citizen.
At least they don't pretend.
Yes, they don't pretend.
Yes.
Where every 10 houses, anyone who does anything in every 10 house or mudugudu in Rwanda, the state will know. Just like that. Now, I don't think such a thing is possible in Uganda. Uganda is too chaotic. People go around their business.
Actually,
yes.
It is very interesting that you say that because that system was, in fact, directly borrowed, guess where? From Uganda.
But
except that in Uganda,
it
doesn't work anymore. But,
yes.
But they have they have other structures.
Yes.
Which essentially are through the state.
Okay.
They call them district security officers, and down there you have Gomborora and what have you, until you get those 10 houses you are talking about, my friend. And all these people, by the way, borrowed the system from a man who used to be called the King of African Kings, brother leader, Colonel Muammar Gaddafi of
brother
Libya.
Let me tell you what we're talking about here, the difference of the other 2 I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. 40 bodies found floating in a lake. People assassinated in South Africa. Mm-hmm. People who oppose the regime. Mm-hmm. The opposite. Basically, three things happen to anyone who fall out of line: in prison, disappearance, death.
So, you've also been following the African scene. Do you agree with Dr. Himbara?
Yeah, I will support, and I want to amplify the point he's making. I have been saying this over and over again in many places, in America and elsewhere. When you look at nation building and state building in Africa, what he's saying, he comes with the metaphor of the 10 dinosaurs in African politics. Now, you can go critically, you can have a good master's student or PhD student to really take each one of these people and talk about. Right now, they talk about North Korea on the Red Sea. Somebody is making a metaphor out of it. Mm-hmm. Because you're talking about Isaias and the Eritreans. You know, they have a Greek name. Eritrea is a Greek word for the Red Sea in Greece, in ancient Greek. Mm-hmm. So they're making a pun on that. North Korea in the Red Sea.
Right.
You see, the dictatorship, they are parallel. Kagame and Isaias are similar. What he is saying, they learn from Museveni. And then he brought another metaphor, which is now totally discredited, Gaddafi. Gaddafi ruled from 1969, when he took power from a royal family, until he died, over 40 years. You see, one thing that has to be borne in mind about these new dictatorships, that's why I want the American government to be pushed forward. During Obama's last days, we had a dialogue here before. I told you, it's not over. Obama is going to push. We have to push these people towards democracy. You cannot do it. It takes two to tango. You cannot change African dictatorship unless the African people wake up.
Absolutely.
So the Senegalese proved that. The Senegalese proved that with Abdoulaye Wade. Yeah. He wanted to follow Obasanjo. Obasanjo was supporting him. He wanted to have a third term.
You raised a very interesting question. In fact, when you talk about these totalitarian dictators and what have you, someone will quickly say, why don't the people vote them out? Like they voted out, for example, Abdoulaye Wade in Senegal. Like, for example, the Nigerians refused to grant Olusegun Obasanjo a third term.
Yes.
Like they refused to grant a third term to Frederick Chiluba of Zambia.
Yes.
Like they refused to grant a third term to Bakiri Muluzi of Malawi.
Yes.
Why can't that happen in Rwanda? Why can't it happen in Uganda? Why can't it happen in Equatorial Guinea? Why can't it happen in Cameroon? In Sudan, in South Sudan. Why?
Okay, now.
In Eritrea, in Ethiopia.
No. See, I think you're raising a very fundamental issue. And most of our colleagues who are political scientists, whether they're in America or in Oxford or in Australia, they are looking at it. The problem of these tyrannies in Africa, how do you grapple with these tyrannies? Many of our scholars in the 70s and 80s who were addressing Mobutu and others, these were beneficiaries of the Cold War. Museveni, Isaias and others benefited from a presidential handshake of Bill Clinton. In many ways,
Clinton has actually characterized him, and I was watching him on television, on CNN, when Bill Clinton was in Haiti during the earthquake. He said, why doesn't Haiti learn from Rwanda, for example, where you have this incredible leader, Paul Kagame, who he characterized as one of the greatest leaders of our time. A man who has pulled off remarkable reconciliation, for example. You know, I was not born speaking English, but at least I happen to know that when you talk about reconciling, you talk about two groups of people being reconciled, correct?
Yes.
Now, I'm wondering, of course, whether that has really happened. And in fact, Tony Blair, a man who came from a country that, in fact, invented or discovered the Magna Charta, who went to Oxford to boot, just like Bill Clinton, a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford, has described Paul Kagame as a visionary leader. These people must know what they are talking about. In any case, let's go for a break and we'll come back to that. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more discussion in a moment, but first here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is our letter of the week from a Straight Talk Africa Facebook fan who responded to our question of the week. Often Jeremiah from Kampala in Uganda writes, U.S. policy has been a 50-50, that's what I think, in promoting democracy and rule of law on the continent. This is why the U.S. will support or side with leaders who are their puppets. But the U.S. has also helped bring about good governance and respect for rule of law and democracy in Africa. But in the end, it's up to us, the Africans, to bear the greatest responsibility to do it.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.